A lot of folks in southwestern Montana had a call to action earlier this month. It was kind of initially a bit scary. A gate failure at the Earthen Hebgen Dam dramatically reduced water flow to the Madison River for a period of about 48 hours, less than that even. And what ensued after that is a story, I think, of agency, community, and industry cooperation that just as dramatically helped to protect this valuable resource. Today, if you'll forgive that hydro pun, I'm going to dive into this more. Eric Roberts, Fisheries Management Bureau Chief with the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, will be on to talk about the current status, the efforts, the projected impact, and also the response. Give us some takeaways. In fact, they'll all give us some takeaways. Jeremy Klotfelter with Northwestern Energy. He's the Director of Hydro Operations there. And Andy Welch, he's the Manager of Hydro License Compliance at Northwestern Energy. They'll talk more about this cause and also actions taken to remedy. They'll give us some remedial efforts that they anticipate moving forward with to protect and ensure the future of this fishery. And then Marshall Bettendorf with us, Executive Director of the Ennis Chamber of Commerce and Tourism. A lot of good community effort involved in what I think is remedying a potential bad situation as quickly and as efficiently as possible. I'm Tom Schultz. Thanks for clicking on the podcast. I host Voices of Montana, a live radio program heard statewide on 15 stations and 24 signals. Feel free to contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com, and I would appreciate it if you subscribe and you'll have these updated podcasts in your inbox. Let's get the take first from Montana's Fish, Wildlife, and Parks and Fisheries Management Bureau Chief, and from the Fisheries Division is Eric Roberts, who joins us this morning. Good morning, Eric. How you doing?
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me this morning.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Appreciate that. This could have been, in my mind, I look at this, I'll have you kind of describe what happened, a gate failure at the Hebgen Dam. I think it drew down the water flow coming from the dam from like 270 or from 650 to around 270 or thereabouts. But everybody just hustled, and it really made what could have been a bad situation not so bad.
Yeah, you're absolutely right there, Tom. It really brought together a lot of people you have on the show today. Really what happened was on the 30th, that's when the state first got word that there was something going on at the dam there. Flows reduced drastically below Hebgen Dam, and as you can imagine, the impacts of that just kind of worked their way downstream. And so right off the bat, our folks were on the line with people from the power company. We were hearing from people in the community right away, and people really wanted to get right out there and try to get on the ground to see what they could do to save the resource and protect the fish. And so it was one of those things. We were getting information pretty quickly from Northwestern, and really initially we were in touch with people in the community holding them back because, one, we didn't know if this was going to be a long-term event or a short-term, and even to the point where we didn't even know if there was really a safety concern. So we didn't want people out there marching up and down the river if the flow was going to come back on all of a sudden there. So there was a lot of stuff going on there on the 30th and a lot of back and forth between the state, the community, and as well as the power company. So a lot of communication going on there.
Getting all that straightened out, I mean, that is job number one. When you got out there on the scene, what did you see?
Our folks got out there on the scene, and we had already largely heard it that the river was a lot of sections there where the river was really just going dry. There was still what we call in the business, we call it a wetted perimeter. So there was still water flowing down the river. But as you can imagine, when flows decline that rapidly, there's a lot of fish that do get stranded up on shallow riffles or in little residual pools and those sorts of things. People kind of their minds first jump to what's happening with adult fish, and they have maybe envisioned adult fish that are stranded out on gravel bars, that sort of thing. That really didn't happen, but what we did see on the ground were there's a lot of juvenile fish, a lot of small fish that were just hatched this year or the last couple years, as well as other species, not only trout but sculpins and dace and those and smaller fish like that too. And so we saw them stranded out on what were once wetted riffles, then became basically dry with just very small puddles on there.
How long can those species live in that sort of, I don't know what you would call it, a wetted perimeter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'd be surprised, especially the time of year that it happened, the water being cold like it is, they're pretty resilient, and they can last for, especially with the temperatures we were dealing with, we knew that they could survive for the most part overnight or maybe even another day or two in those types of conditions. If something like this were to occur, like during the summertime when you have high water temperatures and it's much higher stress time of year for fish, it would have been a much more dire outlook. And so, if anything, the season that this occurred, it did buy us some time, and it probably did help out the fishery a little bit because fish are, they're just a little more durable when the temperatures are super cold like that. Not super cold, but when they're colder like that.
So you assess the situation and you get the analysis, and then what's the action plan?
So the action plan right away is largely community driven. People are really wanting to get out there on the ground and help out. And so all the discussion happened on the 30th. We got more information from Northwestern Energy. They gave us a better idea of what was going on and gave us a better timeline of what was going on. So first thing we did, we implemented a fishing closure so people wouldn't go out and target fish and catch a whole bunch of fish in the pools that were left, and pull those out of there. So we got that right away. But then we got some of our field guys out there on the ground with their electrofishing units, their way for us to efficiently capture fish, just to go out and save and rescue some of those smaller fish that were stuck in some of the residual pools and get them out into the deeper water. And so we had crews electrofishing. We'd met up with some people there, or several people there in the community. They also just had gloves and dip nets and things like that, and just systematically worked their way through sections of the river there to move some of these smaller fish into the bigger pools and deeper water that was left there.
Eric Roberts with us here, Fisheries Management Bureau Chief with the FWP, as we talk about this Earthen Hebgen Dam and a gate failure there that reduced flow on the Madison River. Period, I'm guessing, well, I'm looking, trying to time it all, about 45 hours or so. So when you get out there, you get some community effort going on. What stretch of the river? Now, the Hebgen Dam is an earthen dam. It has actually a small gate. It's basically... there, it kind of controls the water. And I'll ask Northwestern Energy about, management of that dam. But how much of the river actually was impacted?
Well, it was impacted through a pretty good stretch of river there, and to some degree or other, all the way down to Ennis Lake. But as far as where closely monitoring flows, obviously that upper stretch from Hebgen Dam down to Quake Lake and below Quake Lake, that's sort of the most impacted stretch. But even you get down to Kirby, they trip some minimum flow requirements down there as well. And so there were reduced flows throughout a large section of the river there, all the way down to Ennis and past Ennis. But as you get downstream, the impacts aren't as noticeable as they are as you got up closer to the dam.
When you were moving fish, did you move them into either one of those lakes?
No, we didn't. There was enough other water and enough pools and other habitats nearby that we could just move fish, and it was a matter of almost shuttling them from the more isolated pools into the areas with deeper water. So we didn't have to move anything very far.
What's the current status right now?
Current status right now, I know this is kind of frustrating for a lot of folks. They want to know what were the impacts, what happened.
Yeah.
I mean, we've determined what happened, but as far as impacts go, we really won't know until time will tell. This comes off the tail end of the brown trout spawning season, and so we expect to see some impacts to next year's hatch of brown trout. Brown trout spawn in the fall. They hatch and emerge in the spring, and so there's a high probability that there's some spawning reds or spawning nests that got exposed, and so those fish likely aren't going to hatch. So there's probably going to be some impacts there, but it's one of those things that we really can't just go out there and take a look at it. It requires, it's going to require some time. some time out on the ground and monitoring and just to figure out what the long-term impacts are from this. But we do have a fish monitoring section there nearby. We do get out there and we do keep an eye on this fishery pretty regularly, and so we expect to be able to put our finger on what happened, or what happened to the fisheries-wise standpoint here within the next. It's honestly going to be 2 years, 3 years before we really understand every piece of that.
Yeah, that's.
But the good news there is Northwestern Energy is a great partner with us, and we're working through how to keep an eye on that and what we can do going forward there. And so we do expect to be able to answer those questions. It's just going to take a little time.
Yeah, and I thought Northwestern Energy's response was pretty good on this as well. I mean, they had to manufacture this part in Anaconda and get it up there and get it installed. We'll talk with them here in just a little bit. Eric Roberts, finishing up, a Fisheries Management Bureau Chief here with the Montana FWP. So are there, like, remedial efforts in the meantime that you guys take to try and, you know, have an impact on what has happened?
Yeah, if anything, the remedial efforts were just like the community involvement, like we described before. Get some fish back in the water. And to Northwestern Energy's credit, they got flows going again as quickly as they could. And so we implemented a fishing closure right off the bat. And then by December 2nd, that would be the Thursday. We had already reopened the river back to fishing again. And so sort of the immediate emergency had passed. But in the meantime, it's just kind of keep an eye on things and just make sure everything's out there working the way we want it to.
I suppose.
Hope for it.
Eric Roberts with the FWP. We'll get back with him at some point, too, and talk about these takeaways. And we'll look at the projected impact of the fisheries and then current status. Marshall Bettendorf will join us a bit later on. He's with the Ennis Chamber of Commerce and Tourism as executive director. They were pretty happy with the response. Northwestern Energy now up next. Cause of and actions taken to remedy the current status as well. Jeremy Klotfelter and Andrew Welch will join us here. It's From Montana, For Montana, Voices of Montana.
It's called a whiteout, and it requires caution. Snowplows create a cloud of snow that limits visibility for drivers following too closely, oncoming vehicles, and sometimes even the snowplow driver. Be patient. Plows maneuver slowly to clear the roads. As you approach a snowplow, slow down and give the plow driver room to work. Remember, don't crowd the plow. A safety message from AAA Mountain West and the Montana Department of Transportation.
You get a chance to ask Eric, and welcome back. It's Tom Schultz on the Northern News Network for Montana, For Montana, Voices of Montana. You can get a chance to ask Eric how many calls he got from folks around the world, as a matter of fact. This is a world-renowned trout fishery, and we will ask Marshall about that a bit later on as well. But again, recapping here, gate failure at Hebgen Dam. Reduced water flow in the Madison River for a period of about 45 hours. I think what happened after that, good communication between agency, FWP, the community, and industry in terms of Northwestern Energy in their response. And we welcome now Jeremy Klotfelter, Director of the Hydro Operations at Northwestern, and then also Andy Welch is on. He's the manager of Hydro License Compliance there. First, Jeremy, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having us on.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on and kind of answering some of these questions. Also, Andy Welch. Andy, what's going on with you?
Oh, good morning. I'm happy to see the snow restocking our water supply for the year. Good morning.
Need a little bit of that. Jeremy, just first off, what happened there?
Yeah, we had a failure of a gate component, which basically did not allow us to control or move the gate up and down. The gate controls water from Hebgen Reservoir downstream into the Madison River. And when that occurred, as everyone pretty well knows, the flows dropped to about a third of what they were beforehand. And then we had to identify the issue and repair it to restore flows.
What was the issue?
Yeah, it was a if you picture a gate kind of like an irrigation gate where you have a rectangular gate down below the water surface, and then a long shaft or what we call a stem, which connects it to a drive above to move it up and down. And a component of that gate stem or shaft broke. So the gate was no longer connected to the drive above.
You know, and I think it's interesting, and we'll get to it here in just a little bit, but you guys are examining that part in many different ways, because you'll have to file a report here with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And so I'm curious about that. But let's ask, let's go to Andy Welch here, again, manager hydro license compliance there. And people have to picture this too, because this is not, when they say Hebgen Dam, it's an earthen dam, Andy. And you know, this gate is what, how far across is it? Is it 30, 40, 50 feet?
The dam or the gate?
The gate.
The gate, that would probably be a question for Jeremy. I'm not sure the exact dimension.
Jeremy?
I think it's about 14 feet wide by 9 feet tall.
Yeah, so it's just essentially an irrigation gate. I don't care who answers this one, but there's no electricity generated at Hebgen Dam. Why does Northwestern Energy manage it?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. It's really part of the system of sites on the Madison and Missouri rivers. It's under one combined FERC license, and we do get benefit from it by controlled flows down the Madison, which ultimately, you know, feeds our Madison plant there south or north of Ennis and then into the Missouri from there. So it does provide value for us, and we haven't given up on the idea of installing some generation at that site at some point in the future as well.
Hey, Andy, what is the water level? How are things in Hebgen Lake and then down in Earthquake Lake, and you've got Ennis Lake and on through?
Yeah, you know, Hebgen took, you know, the brunt of this dry, hot summer, and we had to end up drawing down Hebgen more than we typically would on a summer time frame, and that was all to essentially protect the fishery downstream. And so working with our partners, such as Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, that, you know, we had to make a prioritization decision and say, what do we do to best support the resources here? And, you know, fisheries outweigh the dock owners. And so, you know, we ended up supplying more water to the river downstream to support that, you know, trophy trout fishery. And Hebgen Lake was drawn down more than we would typically see. And so I would say, you know, relative to most other rivers in the dry Southwest this summer, that the Madison was probably in better shape than many, just because the capacity and availability of using that water from Hebgen.
Give us some numbers on that. What's a good water year flow? And I guess you guys use cubic feet per second, and to where we are now.
So on a normal year, this time of year, we're usually about 900 CFS out of Hebgen, and we have to maintain 150 CFS below Hebgen and 600 at Kirby, about 12 miles downstream, and so we're normally right around that 900. This year, we had been holding the flows between 600 and 700 out of Hebgen just to maintain our minimum flow. So we are reduced in flows, trying to conserve water the best we can to prepare for next year. And there's still, you know, adequate water in the river, but it is lower than normal by probably a third.
All right, quick headline break up here, and then we'll come back and with more questions regarding the remedial efforts that Northwestern Energy will do for the Madison fishery and some general takeaways from this as well. Jeremy Klott Felter, Director of Hydro Operations, and Andy Welch is the Manager of Hydro License Compliance. Here's Brian Bennett.
The holiday season means more travel and quality time with extended family and friends. With COVID cases surging nationwide and the highly contagious Delta variant widespread in Montana, get vaccinated now to keep your family healthy. The COVID-19 vaccine is safe, effective, and free. Especially this time of year, it's the best way to protect yourself, your family, and your community. Visit covidvaccine.mt.gov to find a vaccine near you. Montana Department of Public Health and Human Services.
I don't know how many millions of dollars this fishery brings into the Montana economy. We'll get a handle on that with Marshall Bettendorf a bit later on. Tom Schultz back here at, Voices of Montana with Northwestern Energy's Jeremy Klottfelter, Director of the Hydro Operations, Andy Welch, Hydro License Compliance Manager. Let's go, Andy, right into this remedial efforts in terms of, you know, what you saw on the Madison fishery and what Northwestern Energy is going to do moving forward on that fishery.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the real focus area here for the impact was definitely between Hebgen and Quake Lake. It's a two-mile stretch of river in there, and that's what was truly impacted the most with essentially a sudden drop in flows, cut in flows by, you know, 60%. And, you know, that stranded some adult fish that we did have some mortality there. And so that was, you know, one impact. We also potentially could have dried up some reds, but because some, you know, current conditions at the time, you know, we may or may not have impacted those completely. And so we'll see over time. But, you know, I think as FWP stated earlier, it's, you know, it's a waiting game right now of trying to figure out what the impact really is over time with those hatched fish and trying to figure out ways to monitor the, you know, potential emergence of fish this coming spring, and then, you know, just tracking those fish through the population through over, you know, a couple years at minimum. And so, but I mean, the reality of this is the true impact is that short reach of 2 miles upstream. Downstream of there, flows were much more gradual in change because of the presence of Quake Lake. And so, you know, we only saw a drop of about a third of a foot down below, all the way down at Varney, over a two-day period. And so, you know, we shouldn't have had any stranding of fish there. It's just whether or not some of those habitats were dewatered where fish had spawned. And so there's, you know, there's a lot of questions right now. Unfortunately, it's going to be time to make some decisions on what the true impact is. And we've already started discussions with resource agencies to start talking about what do we do here, what's the best way to document some of these impacts, and once that's discovered and documented, then we can start moving on to say, is there anything we can do about this, and if there is, what is it?
Yeah, that's the good and the fair next question, Jeremy. What are your takeaways in that regard?
Well, I think from our end, with the actual failure of the gate, you know, we're going to do a very in-depth analysis of this. We want to understand, you know, how and why this component failed. We know what failed, but we don't know how and why. And, you know, there are some analyses out there that will help us get there. And then really, what do we do for corrective actions to, you know, really prevent recurrence of something like this again in the future? So that's where our focus is, just, you know, pretty parallel to Andy and his group.
And that has to come, suppose, relatively quickly, because you guys will have to file a report with the FERC. I mean, give us the timeline of when we maybe get more information on that event.
Yeah, initial reports to FERC, we have one that's due 10 days after the event and one that's due 14 days. So that time is really, one of those is already passed and the other one is coming up here today, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, but FERC is, you know, they will coordinate and cooperate with us. They'll offer their expertise as well. To do this correctly, which we want to, it's not going to happen overnight. It'll take us probably several months to get to a root cause and to complete some of these analyses that will help us get there. But, you know, we're confident in the repair, that it's in place. Everything is functional. The flows have been restored. And we want to make sure we're very thoughtful and, you know, correct in how we address this going forward.
Well, I appreciate the quick action, all the communication as well. And we will circle back with you guys. Thank you, Jeremy Klotfelter and Andrew Welch. Merry Christmas to you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Happy Christmas.
Montana continues right after this.
It's a fact. Human beings thrive in stable, predictable environments. But for the last few years, the world has been anything but stable and predictable, which may have left you feeling out of sorts. One thing you can count on is Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Montana. We're committed to making mental health services more accessible to our members and to our communities, so you can get the help you need. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Montana is with you, for you, through it all.
Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Montana, Division of Healthcare Service Corporation, a Mutual Legal Reserve Company.
Let's get back to this topic here about the Earthen Dam, Hebgen Dam, reduced water flow on the Madison River for a period of about 45 hours. After that, agencies and communities and the industry came together. And I thought getting this thing kind of done in about 45 hours, you know, this, and let me just, Marshall Bettendorf is with us, executive director of the Ennis Chamber of Commerce and Tourism. Good morning, Marshall. I appreciate you being here. This was scary from sort of, the get-go, but people just rallied around it, and I think there's some good takeaways out of this.
Yeah, good morning, Tom, and thanks for having me on this morning. And by the way, quite a heady lineup that you have this week, so I'm honored to be a part of it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you know, initially, I think that there were resounding cries of, oh my gosh, this is going to be horrendous with the dam and the lack of water flow. Tremendous lack of water flow, mm-hmm. But as you said, the community, not only here, but quite frankly, across the entire state, as crews gathered to help move the fish back in and do some other work on the waterway, that the support was quick. It was professionally done, well organized, and I think that's the way they came out with hopefully not very much impact in the long run. It could have been much worse, but everybody gathered together and, saved the fish in the waterways and our love of life out here, which Ennis, you know, is pretty much here because of the great Madison River.
Yeah, well, it's such a beautiful part of Montana with the mountain ranges there as well. As Eric Roberts had said, and he's with the FWP, there was so much initial response that kind of had to pull people back a little bit because they didn't have a clear, it took a little while, I should say, until they fully assessed the situation and the safety of the situation. That speaks to the community.
Well, absolutely. And I think their main focus was to make sure that when they started to do things, that they were doing things in the right way. You don't want to have 10 people that are doing something that becomes counterproductive. And I think that's what they were really doing. And yeah, we had so many people that rushed to gather and what can we do and how can we help? And we had people that traveled 3 and 5 hours away that heard about it, drove quite frankly overnight, probably because they've been here before and they realized the dramatic effect this could have going forward. But when they all showed up, you had to get them organized and you had to figure out and explain to everybody the best proper way to quite frankly move fish, how to move them, where to move them to, what to be careful of. And so I think that took a little bit of time, but in the end, I think it paid huge dividends that everything was done as correctly as possible because of the leadership by so many different organizations.
I know we value that fisheries in more than just a financial sense, but what is the financial impact or the value of the Madison River? And I know the town is also centered on hunting and just all kinds of recreation, but what's the figures behind that, Marshall?
The figures, the financial figures?
Yeah.
Well, we had a chamber dinner about a couple of weeks ago, and we had somebody from the Montana State Tourism Board and collection of information, and they said that there was over 1.2 visitors through just the town of Ennis in this past calendar year. And if you take them times food and beverage and accommodations, I mean, the figures are staggering. I don't quite frankly have them in front of me to give an absolute dollar amount. It's hard to track here. You know, we're a small town. I think people across Montana know we're a town of about 850, 900 full-time residents. We have a parade that had, you know, close to 4th of July parade that had close to 10,000 people this past year. And we just got finished with a Christmas stroll. So, you know, our town is based on tourism. We have a couple of industries here, companies here that export items, but mostly we're a tourism town. I know when people come in my office and I say, well, what can we do here? I say, well, we eat and drink here and we sleep here, but then you go outside and you enjoy the outdoors. So obviously the Madison is a huge part of that, as are the mountain range. So the effect of the Madison and what could have happened was dramatic. And so we're all very, very happy with, as we've discussed, the quick response.
Executive Director
get the river back in order.
Of the Ennis Chamber of Commerce and Tourism, Marshall Bettendorf. What are people talking about now? What are they telling you now? What's sort of their takeaway? I guess it takes some time to evaluate all of this, but What's the scuttlebutt? Didn't have a good plan, had a good plan, were thankful?
No, I think that they were extremely thankful for all the quick and proper help. I think that they are, you know, somewhat in a wait and see. There's so many, and I don't want to get into conversations of which I'm not an expert of, but, you know, the spawning period and what's going on and how many fish may be interrupted going forward, I think is somewhat of a wait and see. And, you know, what we hope is that we got everything back and restored as quickly as we humanly could possibly have done, and the nature is going to take its course from there. And we'll see what the impact is. But so far, there's been no knee-jerk reaction of any kind, which is really, really good. And I think we're just going to wait and see what happens in the spring and later on in the year, and then a full calendar year to see what the true impact may or may not be. But right now, it's just speculation. And I'm very thankful that there's not a whole lot of disinformation out there, and people are glad to get it back in order. And now let's just see what happens.
Yeah, I am too. And like you say, some knee-jerk reactions and finger-pointing and things like that. It was less than 48 hours when the gate was repaired and water was that was key in all this as well. 1.2 million visitors, you said. 10,000 people at the 4th of July parade. I bet you've given out your cell phone number to a few of those visitors from around the world. Are they calling? Are they asking questions?
About this specific instance?
Yeah.
Not really. I think that the maybe in the tackle shops here in town, probably more than in my specific office. But I do think that the word has gotten out and to good folks like yourself that have, you know, talked about this issue. But I do think that around the state, the information got out that it was looked at. Northwest Energy responded really, really quickly. The dam people, everybody involved. And what could have been a terrible, terrible incident turned into something that happened. It was responded to. And, you know, so far, as I said, there's, you know, it's kind of a wait and see, but we all think that really good things are going to happen. So, no, I don't think anybody's called the office here, and I don't think anybody's canceled reservations, gone, oh, my gosh, there's not going to be any fish in the Madison or anything crazy like that. So, yeah, no, I think that the information that has gotten out has been positive and correct. And so, no, I think everybody is going, you know, back to their daily jobs and fishing, and I think that's all been very positive.
Okay, so when they do call you then, Marshall, what are they calling you about?
Right now they're calling about how much snow is in Big Sky, and is the Jack Creek Road Pass open. And we just got finished with a pretty big event here in town, our Christmas Stroll. And we, you know, the town was full. We had lots of things going on at different locations and had a gingerbread baking contest, and we think we had over 300 people come through and just look at the results of that. So it was quite the weekend. So my phone's been ringing off the hook based on that and planning for next year. We've had some people already talk and ask us what's going on with our events next year. So it was a very, very positive year here in Ennis. We had a lot of visitors, a lot of people that are staying here. Montana's a great place to be, and Ennis is just a part of that.
I want to talk more about the town because it's, I think, a favorite for many. So we'll come on back. It's a top 10 cowboy town in America. As you said, the Christmas Stroll had just happened. Marshall Bedendorf is with us, executive director of the Ennis Chamber of Commerce and Tourism here on the Voices of Montana. Back with more in a bit.
If you enjoy the simple pleasure of wrapping your fingers around a nice, warm cup of tea, or you know someone that does, I've got a great gift idea for you. Tumblewood Teas in Big Timber. Risa Gilpin and Lori Rennie were recently recognized as community heroes on the Tow Rope Tour. And I will tell you, their teas are infused with every bit of passion and flavor that these two women bring. Give yourself or your neighbor a cup of comfort. Ask for Tumblewood Teas where you buy groceries or head to tumblewoodteas.com.
Finishing up on this discussion here regarding the Earth and Hebgen Dam. Again, a lot of good community response. Executive Director of the Ennis Chamber of Commerce and Tourism is Marshall Bettendorf. Marshall, appreciate your time here. A top 10 cowboy town in America. I think that's deserving. But talk about Ennis. Talk about this impact over the past couple of years as a tourism town of the travel restrictions.
Well, we were very fortunate in 2020, the year of COVID. You know, we were shut down for a little bit as a town. But like most Montana, everybody kind of got back to business and did it as safely as possible. Our leadership in the state has been fantastic and within our own town. So we actually did not lose one business in the COVID year. In fact, we gained 6 new businesses in town.
Wow.
And of those 6, two, I should say business owners, 6 new business owners, of which 2 of them had taken over businesses that were their ownership had been for over 30 years, each of them, and they were looking to sell their business and move on. And even in the year of COVID, we had people looking to move here permanently to Ennis and take over a business or start a new one. So we have had an incredibly great economic run the last 2 years here in Ennis, and we're very, very, very proud of that and very delighted and you know, it's been good work of a lot of people in this town. So
I imagine you guys are also struggling with housing prices then, like the rest of the state?
Well, yeah. And everybody wants to move to this great state. And once you get here, you can see why. So, but yeah, housing prices have definitely risen here in Ennis, not unlike pretty much the rest of Montana, from what I understand, talking to my other chambers across the state. But our construction people are probably booked out 18 months right now to almost 2 years. So with the building prices as they are, hopefully those will start to come down a little bit for everybody's sake. But we're still very, very fortunate. And, gosh, we're looking for people to work here in town. So if anybody wants to move to Ennis, this is the time.
I know, but it's real hard because – can you afford to live there? I think there's a lot of communities struggling with that issue.
Yeah, and we've had a lot of studies lately. But, yeah, Ennis is not an inexpensive town in Montana, but it's not crazy.
Not Bozeman.
No, not from what I understand. But, you know, there's plenty of jobs here. There's plenty of opportunity to earn a good living. Prices are not crazy. And housing is difficult, you know, there's that, but there is opportunities out there. And if you come in and you, you know, have a good job and you stay at it, affording to live in Ennis is not difficult.
All right, I got a total of about a minute and a half here. 2 questions. Sum up your takeaways from this event. And then also, and I know you're going to say it's more than one, but if there's just one event that people should come to Ennis for, what would that be?
Well, I think that the Fly Fishing and Outdoor Festival would be that event. In fact, we had such a great response last year that we've actually moved the date a little bit. It's going to be at the end of August. It's going to be towards the last weekend in August. And it's going to actually have a lot more outdoor activities. We're looking at adding a few exterior events, like an archery competition and a rifle competition, as well as just all the great fishing boats and equipment and speakers. So that's a really great event and a perfect time of year to visit Ennis if you've not done so. And as far as wrapping up from the event, I think that, you know, what you really saw is what people talk about. And it's one thing to talk about how people in Montana rally around each other and help their neighbors, but to see it actually transpire in a very quick and efficient manner and then to take the proper care with the fish and with the river was very heartwarming. And I think people looked at it as not so much as a financial response as it was just the right thing to do to keep the state beautiful and all of our resources in the best possible shape.
Appreciate you being on, Marshall. Yeah, good job. Yeah. Take care. Yeah. Happy Christmas. Happy New Year.
Yeah, same to you. And thanks again. Have a great rest of your week.
Yeah, we will run into you, I'm sure. Marshall Bettendorf, Executive Director of the Ennis Chamber of Commerce and Tourism. My thanks to Eric Young, our in-studio engineer. Again, I'll say it, it's a Monday. Get out there and kick it, eh?